Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am the iconic.
Wow.
The legendary.
A declaration. Wow.
Without merit, Jarrett Hill.
And I am entertainment journalist and editor Travell Anderson. Coming up on the show, we're going for the next 2 weeks, starting this week and next week, we're going to dive deep into award season conversations, talking about these award shows. Should we be invested in them, et cetera, et cetera. This week, we're focusing on music with a very special, special guest. But first, we've got a tough question for you. All right. So a tough question for those of you who are familiar is our opportunity. Jarrett and I, you know, we be grappling with some questions every now and again, and we want to bring it to you all or bring it to each other for some conversation. All right. And today's tough question comes from yours truly. So we've been talking about this vaccine situation, okay, for the last, you know, year. And we are now in this moment, right, where vaccines are being distributed. They're going through, you know, the different phases of all of that. Biden came out last week and said that he's encouraging, right, all states to open up eligibility for every American by, was it April or May 1st?
May 1st,
I believe. May 1st. And so, you know, one of the things that's been presented to me, I've had a number of people that I know in various ways in community who have basically reached out with like the hookup, meaning, you know, they know somebody who knows somebody or they are the person to know, right, in order to get me vaccinated, help me to jump the line in order to get vaccinated before, you know, I, at least here in LA County, I don't want to say qualified, but what's the word?
Eligible.
There we go. Eligible for it. And I literally have had like four or five people reach out to me with these connects or with these, you know, ways to go about it, right? And we've seen all the reporting on it. But for me, I have this consternation. I have this feeling deep down in my gut every time somebody presents this opportunity. And so the tough question for clarity's sake, right, is like, should I skip the line, you know, for vaccination? Now, to be clear, disclaimer, I don't care what everybody else is doing. It ain't none of my business, okay? You do your business and I'm gonna do my business, okay? But I'm just talking about with the feelings I have, you know, with this idea of quote unquote skipping the line. It just feels off to
me.
Can I
ask you to unpack what you mean by you don't care what everyone else is doing?
But because there's a lot of conversation already on social media about like people trying to like either figure out why certain people have gotten vaccinated, right? Basically trying to get into knowing other people's medical history,
gotcha,
right? That might allow them to be eligible versus people who might not be eligible. And then you have folks on social media also just saying like, I know this person, I know their, at least they think they know their medical history, and they got a hookup, you know, to get vaccinated before, you know, they were quote unquote supposed to, at least based on what, you know, the federal government and the local governments, you know, have put out there. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not contributing to that because like everybody needs to get vaccinated, and what you do for your body is your business, okay? Mm-hmm. Shout out to Tabitha Brown. And what I do for my body in this house is
my business. Yeah.
Okay. And so it's just like, I just don't, it just feels off to me, and I'm not sure exactly why.
I get that. And so I went and got vaccinated on Monday. There was a place here that was doing like, they give out X number of doses to whoever can come in a certain amount of time. And a friend of mine and I went and got vaccinated. And I am not like a stand in line type of person. Like, I'm not standing in line for 8 hours to get a PlayStation. I'm not standing in line to get tickets to whatever. Like, that's just not my personality. And I also noted, like, I've been working in this business long enough that I'm pretty used to being able to, like, email a publicist and be able to get
to
the...
You're a bougie bitch.
Well, okay, first of all, this is the second
it's
time
okay. I've... It's okay, listen.
This is the second time I've been told that by somebody in 2 days, and I don't appreciate it.
It's okay. You just want to exercise in the ways to which you've become accustomed. Ain't that how they say it?
we're getting a divorce now, apparently. But yes, but like, I'm like, God damn, I have to stand in this line for all these hours. And so like, I was kind of annoyed by that, but it's like, you know, this is the process. It's kind of an equalizer. And like, to your question, number one, the rules are different every other place that you go, right? From county to county, from state to state, like the rules about who is eligible and who is not are different. And
right.
Ultimately, the way that I look at this is we are all in survival mode and have been for the last year because there's something outside that is killing people, right? And so when I think about it through that lens, people are trying to not die. So if you have the opportunity and you're not like, you know, yanking the needle out of somebody else's arm, I don't really see the problem with it. There have been some instances where I've been offered a vaccine because like, oh, we have extra doses that are left over and we need to use them and we don't have any other appointments. Would you like to come? And I wanted to do that, but I wasn't able to do it that day. And so like, that would technically be skipping the line, right? Like, but like,
I'm well, not no, taking well, so, it from someone else. To be clear, disclaimer, I don't care what everybody else do, but what you did, right, and what people do, right, in the example that you just mentioned of, you know, there are these extra vaccines, we need to give them out, because, right, there are these all these particulars in terms of, like, you have to use certain vaccines by a certain time and all that other right. stuff. The folks who get their vaccines via those methods, like, So I don't even want to get into that because, again, it gets into that whole policing what other people do. So, again, I'm talking about Travell Anderson, mm-hmm. okay? What y'all do is what y'all do. But for me, it just feels – it does feel very like, you know, taking the needle out of somebody's arm. Mm-hmm. It does feel very – especially, like, as somebody who, you know, in L.A. County – I thought I was going to be able to, you know, qualify with the obesity, the BMI thingamajiggy. Mm-hmm. So like, I think in New York, for example, like if your BMI is like 30 or 35 or something like that, you qualify. But here in LA County, you have to be, in the problematic category of severe obese, which means that was a quotation marks in case people ain't heard that, which means your BMI has to be over 40, I would think. And I'm not quite yet at that 40 mark, but I thought I was gonna be able to slide in if it was 30, honey.
I was gonna say, okay? BMI being some bullshit might actually be doing something nice for Black people this time.
Period.
I mean, there's been a long-standing conversation about BMI being completely biased and not being effective for Black people. That's a different conversation. But my real answer here, like hearing you talk about it, is it feels like it goes against your constitution, and if it goes against your constitution, you shouldn't do it. Because you shouldn't get it and like then feel guilt about it and shame and then not want to tell anybody that you take, like if it's really bothering you to that extent, you shouldn't do it. Just wait.
Last thing I'll say is that I do think that, you know, all of this will subside, right? Assuming the April 1st situation, you know, manifests itself. And I'm also in this moment, I was going to say that, oh, I would love to hear you all's thoughts about, you know, getting the vaccine and whether I should do it. But no, I don't want to hear what y'all think, to be quite honest.
Well, there's that. But
it just is something that I'm dealing with and I'm grappling with. And I thought it would make for interesting conversation. But again, you do you. Because as you said, Jared, we are all fighting for our lives. Okay, honey?
We are. I hate you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to be talking to the incredible Danielle Smith from Spotify's brand new show called Black Girl Songbook. We're going to be talking about the Grammys and music award shows. It is a conversation you don't want to miss. Fantize coming right back.
Hey, folks, it's me, James Arthur M., host of Minority Corner, your home through these wild times for weekly doses of pop culture, history, news, nerdy stuff, and more through a BIPOC queer and allied lens.
Y'all, we have been in a panorama for a whole year.
The Ponda replay has been going for... We've been a Ponderosa for a year.
Wonder Woman doesn't even get to fly her own invisible jet. That was another thing. I was like, this is your jet.
Think about the war on drugs. We must think of it as a war on Black and brown and poor people to only uphold the caste system of America. So join me and some of your new BFFs every Friday here on Maximum Fun to stay informed, empowered, and have some fun. Minority Corner, because together we're the majority.
Hi, I'm Joe Firestone.
And I'm Manolo Moreno.
and we host After Game Show, a podcast where listeners submit games and we play them regardless of quality with a dozen listeners from around the world.
We've had folks call in from as far as Sweden, South Africa, and the Philippines.
Here's an example. Yesterdog, where players must sing a Beatles song but throw in the word dog and dog-related terms. Like, do you have an example, Manolo?
Yeah. Hey, dog. Dog, 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 bone.
Oh, okay. Dr. Game Show has new episodes every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun. Check us out!
Check us out.
Nice.
Welcome back, beautiful people. We are in the thick of award season. At this point, I feel like I can say that we're winding down with the Oscar nominations having come out on Monday and the Grammys happening on Sunday. And like clockwork, so many thoughts and think pieces and Twitter threads have sprouted up as different folks' faves get snubbed and others recycle their ongoing critiques of our, as Black folks, perhaps over-investment in award systems that they say haven't really had our interests in mind from the beginning. So for the next 2 weeks, we're going to do a deep dive of sorts on award season. Next week, we're going to get into film and TV shows, TV award shows like the Oscars and the Emmys. And this week, in light of the Grammys, we're focusing on music-based award shows. So think Billboard Music Awards, VMAs, AMAs, CMAs, the rest of them, LMNOPs. Joining us to break it down is legendary journalist, editor, author, all of the things, and host of the Spotify Original Podcast, Black Girl Songbook, which I've already told y'all that y'all need to check out, okay? The iconic Danielle Smith is with us. Thanks for joining us, Danielle.
I'm just too excited to be here. Like, I can't believe that I've been invited to the cool table, that I feel like I probably brought a corny little lunch and you guys are over here like doing mimosas and I brought like a Capri Sun. So I'm just very happy to be at the cool kids table right now.
I love you so much for that. And I want to say, Travel did not include hair goddess in their description of you, because this full luxurious hair that I've met, this is my second time meeting you. I met you at our media summit, obviously. And like, I am just like, this hair is always extraordinary.
Thank you. I only have great grandparents to thank. Shout out to the ancestors for passing down whatever they passed down. But I told you I did a deep condition for y'all this morning. I told you that.
I love it. We respect and appreciate the work. Okay, so let's jump into the conversation. Are you an award show fanatic? Were you gathered around the TV this past weekend? Or do you not really care about awards?
Shall I be brutally honest?
Yes, that's what this is for.
That's what we want.
I like the Grammys when everybody goes. I like Grammys from the before times. I'm one that's gone to Grammys any number of times over the years. And even if I wasn't going to actual Grammys, like sitting down with my butt in a seat, I was, you know, around Los Angeles or New York for Grammy week, which is always like, you all know, is very like a reunion for everybody that covers culture and specifically, you know, people that cover music. So I miss all of that energy going to the panel discussions, going to the Roots, you know what I mean, jam session, seeing everybody sitting at this hotel bar or that hotel bar. I'm just catching up and getting involved with people. And then also talking about like, whose year is it going to be? We used to always say stuff like, was it going to be a very Black year at Grammys this year? Because if it isn't, then I might just not even go until like the last, you know, 2 days before. But if it is, and there's a feeling that Outkast might win or Lauren might win or Cardi might win, then you would say, well, I'm going to go out for the week because everybody's going to be in a fantastic mood because it's a very Black year. So I miss some of that type of energy.
That's interesting. I feel like that's part of the way that we talk about ratings with these shows even, right? Is like when we're thinking about film and television or music, if there are people nominated that we're excited to see, the ratings tend to be higher. People want to be there a little bit more. So it's interesting to hear you say that. Travel, what about you? Where do you live with awards?
I wasn't really one of those awards people until I started covering award shows, like career wise. I, you know, wasn't one of those households that like got around the TV to watch the Grammys or the Oscars or whatever the case may be. Now we might have sat at the TV to watch the Stella Awards, okay? Because my granny loved her gospel music, okay? And she wanted to see who was gonna get, you know, some attention. But all the rest of the secular music, honey, we didn't really we didn't really focus on those until, like I said, you know, I was working at the LA Times, as everybody who's listened to this podcast knows, and I was covering literally every award show red carpet, and so it kind of requires that you know, listen to some of the music, figure out who's coming down the carpet and all of that. But, you know, for me, award season is just, like, super taxing. Like, even listening to Danielle talk about all of the different events that happen during Grammy week, like, it's like that in LA, literally for two-ish months, with all of the different stuff happening. And it can just be, like, a lot, you know, especially if, like Danielle said, the people that you care about, right, are in town.
I know for myself that award shows are, I feel like award shows tend to be a lot about what's happening around them and not what's actually happening at the event. I've been to a number of award shows sitting in the audience, and after, like, the first 30, 40 minutes, you're like, all right, well, we've done this, right? You know, like, and there's still another 2.5 hours left. It's so exhausting. But I was a kid that always watched those award shows and wanted to be the host. Like, I didn't always really want to be the person, like, performing or, you know, winning the award. And, like, maybe more as I got older. But, like, I would watch the Oscars and be like, oh, my God, I want to do that. I want to be that person. And so that was always how I associated to award shows, and always appreciated the grandeur of an award show.
Yeah, you would definitely want to be center of attention. I see that.
Wow. Danielle was probably going to say something kinder than that. I'll let her speak now. Thank you.
I was going to say, just, I don't know if we gathered around, but I always know if I was watching, I always wanted to either be backstage. I was always imagining, like, what must the people be doing backstage, which follows in terms of what I ended up doing for a living. But then also, I just always liked the performances. Mm-hmm. All the little speeches and all the little jokes and all the little, like, I never really loved too much of that. I really loved it when there was, like, a throwdown performance at Grammys. Like, right now, of course, I'm thinking about Kendrick and Beyonce, and when that moment happened.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, then that's a moment of, like, okay, so the world is stopping for a minute. Like, we're all going to pay attention to this. But let's be honest, like, those kind of moments, it's not just the Grammys. Those kind of moments rarely happen in broadcast television anymore, period. Unless it's what? Super Bowl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you kind of moved us into the fan portion of it. Travelle, what are some of the things that you generally tend to love?
So on that same note that Danielle was speaking about, I love the performances. For me particularly, I really love the tributes that often happen, especially because, like, at a space like the Grammys over the last few years, I don't know how far this dates back, but they were doing, like, these really interesting mix, like, pairs of different artists from, like, different genres. And I think another reason why I love the tributes is, like, it's like the annual opportunity for, like, Yolanda Adams to come out and sing Down, or Ledisi, or Fantasia. Like, you know, those are our tribute girls who they always bring out to do the tributes, and they always do an amazing job. I'm thinking of, I remember Black Girls Rock, this performance that I love, that it was a performance of Nina Simone's Four Women with Ledisi, Kelly Price, Marsha Ambrosius, and was it Jill Scott?
I think it was Jill Scott.
It was Jill Scott.
Yeah.
It was Jill
Scott. My skin is black. Yes.
All of that. And it was everything. And, like, those are the moments. There's another Grammy. I think it was at the Grammys. It was, like, I think it was Yolanda Adams, Reba McEntire, Christina Aguilera. Like, it was, like, five of them. Florence Welch from Florence and the Machine. Mm. And I just remember being like, oh, all five of these wenches is singing, honey. Okay? And you would never see the five of them together.
Anywhere
that's
else.
That's one of the things I love.
Yeah. That makes me think about Lady Marmalade with, like, Patti LaBelle coming out with Christina Aguilera and Maya, mm-hmm. and Pink and Missy Elliott. And, like, those big award show moments. And Lil' Kim. Yes, right. And, like, it's such an exciting kind of moment. Danielle, do you have a moment that you always look back to as, like, your favorite Grammy performance or music award show kind of performance that has always stuck with you?
I mean, like I said, I will go back and back again to Beyonce and Kendrick. I just felt like, one, whenever you see Beyonce with a rapper that is not her husband, It's always a moment. You know that the respect level from our Beyonce has to be on super high, and you pretty much know the same is probably being felt by Jay-Z himself. Turn the rain on the thunder. Tell a storm I'm new. I'm a wild, come a march on the regular. Painted white, flags blue. But just the energy, everything that was going on in the country at that time, I mean, they just came out stomping. Like, it was secular church is what it was, to be honest, to go to your point, Chevelle. It really made me pause whatever I was doing. Like, okay, I need to pay attention because this has me. And I could tell by the energy of it, it has the country. And it just really, I love to when I am a Beyonce fan and she's having a big week. But I love it when Beyonce is not in ballad mode. I love it when Beyonce says, I am going to shake my hair out. I am going to show my legs. I am going to scream and holler. I am going to, you know how she can get that growl in her voice? I am going to growl at y'all. And I think it also inspired Kendrick, who to me, love him to death. Sometimes Kendrick just wants to get up there and rap. But Kendrick had he had to rise to the level of Beyonce's energy. Meet me at the finish line, 40 acres, give me mine. Lemonade, dollar time, keep that in mind. I was like, oh, Kendrick, is this how we can do it? Exclamation, formation. Fellow, great Americans, hello, this is heritage for my medicine. Because if it is, sir, then this is how we should always do it. It was just a great night.
One of the other things I really tend to love about award shows, especially the Grammys, tends to be like finding artists that I hadn't heard of before. And I know the BET Awards always had kind of like a side stage where they would introduce you to new artists. I know that this year at the Grammys, I was not familiar with Mickey Guyton, this Black woman who was the first, I think she's the first Black performer to perform in the country music genre. And I'm like, I'm not really a country music fan, but like her performance was really great. And everyone kept saying she looked like Drew Sidora.
She do look like Drew Sidora.
She looks exactly like Drew Sidora. Like, it was crazy to me. But like,
I don't see it.
Danielle's like, Drew, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just happy that there's a Black woman that's represented in the country music field, to be honest.
Exactly.
As someone who used to work at Billboard and knows how seriously drawn those lines are between genres, listen, I'm just happy to see it.
Absolutely. So I love that. I love that lesser known artists kind of get elevated. A friend of mine was nominated this year, Michael Kilgore, who is a fantastic artist, and his debut single got him nominated for a Grammy, and what that does for a person's career. And I also tend to love like those breakout performances where I remember being a kid and Ricky Martin's performance on the Grammys was what launched him into his career, right? It was
No.
Yeah.
At the Shrine. I was there. That was the same year that Lauren won.
Yeah.
So that was 98. First of all, did you say you was a child? I can't. It's fine.
I was like 13.
Chevelle, you told me that everyone on this show was of the drinking age. Like, you told me that I was going to be on a show where everybody was grown. Chevelle, this is what I was receiving from you. And you had me on the show. Fantastic. With someone who was saying they were a child when they saw. I got to put my glasses back on so I can look at you again on this.
You don't want to know how old Travell was in 1998.
I'm about to say.
You don't.
No, but see, Travell is eternal, though. That's the thing.
That's
he's been here before, he's here now, and he's going to be here ever after. So that's
point.
A whole different situation. A child. You said a child. You didn't even say a teenager. You said a child. Like, you came from the fourth grade.
12
like,
or 13.
And he said it's so regular. Yes, I was a child when Ricky Martin. What? I'm not going to do it with you. I was about to give you all my stories until you said you were a child.
Oh, no. Okay, noted. Next time, do not talk about age with Danielle. All right. Okay. All right.
We get sensitive in our 50s. We get very itchy. We get very concerned.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm just playing.
I'm going to tell Jordan to cut it all out, and it's fine. But you were there that night?
I was there that night at the Shrine, and I just want to say that I was in no way ready. There was... I clearly did not know enough about Ricky Martin or about Menudo. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. He came out there like, y'all are going to see me and experience me this evening.
It was an explosive moment.
Like, he had people on stilts on stage. It was like the Lion King on Broadway. Like, we were standing up the entire performance.
Yeah.
Some people in the audience, we were looking at each other like, but who is that? What was his name?
Did they say
his name? He turned the party out. Like I said, I've been to more than a few Grammys, and that was the party in his Grammys because of Ricky and because Lauren won. Because Lauren kept going back, and then she would go again, and then she would go again. And then we were just like, so she can't win. Like, it was just too much. It was so amazing. But I can't imagine, though, being at home and seeing that, because I even remember seeing the cranes, the cameras shooting that, and thinking in that moment, like, at home, this must look like a whole video. Like,
it was a moment.
They came into the aisles, like Lion King. Like, I'm not even kidding.
No, yeah, it was wild. Explosive. And I think that's what's really exciting about particularly music award shows is that you get these enormous performance moments that like stick with you. I remember being, it doesn't matter how old I was, but I remember I remember watching the VMAs, and like, the VMAs used to be such a moment, right? Like, where so many people would have these crazy big performances, and it was just such an exciting thing. I remember, I guess it was maybe last year or in 2019, Normani had a performance that felt like, that feels like a VMAs performance, where she came out and did Motivation. Lizzo with the big ass on the stage, right? It felt like a VMAs moment, and I think that is really some of the most exciting parts of the music award shows. Go ahead, Danielle.
I mean, I think that's true too. Again, I hate to go back to being Beyonce's publicist, but I'm just going to say, when she came out there and announced her pregnancy,
yes,
and she did Love on Top in that pantsuit. Listen.
Yeah.
A moment.
Yeah.
Already that's one of my favorite songs of all time, but just that much happiness from her, like that, just unadulterated joy. I was like, listen, another time when we were all just like standing up, and not to gossip, that was the time I saw Wiz Khalifa and Amber Rose, not even tongue kissing an audience, but like, just the amount of tongue kissing was, I just felt, I knew them better than I needed to.
You're like, am I old enough to be seeing this right now?
Exactly. Me and my husband were sitting behind them like, is something wrong with our marriage? Like, I just, we are really witnessing love right now. And yeah. So, be turned to doubt that night. That was a night. And because people had kind of said, she's pregnant. And like you were saying, she was on the carpet. She was touching her belly. But we were like, is she kidding? Is she playing? Is she joking? And then when she came out there and was like, it was everything.
Now, Danielle, is there something about award shows that you appreciate when it comes to like what the awards do, right? Like if the value that it has in someone's career, or have you kind of, because I feel like my feelings about that are mixed as we kind of move into the anti.
Well, I mean, this is what I feel, and I say it all the time on Black Girl Songbook, and I say it in Shine Bright, the book, is that the charts and Grammys are flawed rubrics, but it's what we have. Mm-hmm. Mm. Like, I respect Grammys. I do. Anybody Black that has a Grammy in a non-racist world has double that amount. Mm. So that's a rule that I pretty much stick to. Just as I believe any Black artist that has been number one for 5 weeks in a non-racist world was probably number one for 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I really kind of counted up like that many times in my head. So it's the rubric that we have, but because you cannot deny, as you both were saying, the lift that it gives to artists. I had, Estelle Darling's on my show recently to talk about her career and to talk about Sade's career, both of them being just like iconic British soul singers, and American Boy, for which for which Estelle won the Grammy, is one of the best songs of the last 25 years. To be honest, Estelle doesn't have to do another thing. Estelle can tour on that record for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. She has other great records. She has an impeccable voice. But the fact that she can always bill herself as the Grammy-winning Estelle Darlings, it serves her for the rest of... It's the ultimate... It's like a journalist winning a Pulitzer. The Pulitzers, mm-hmm. too, are flawed. Mm-hmm. I believe the same ratio. If you have a Pulitzer as a Black person, you really have to. If you were a finalist... You really won. I've sat on enough, not to get too crazy, but I've sat on enough judging committees for ASME Awards, which are the magazine awards. I used to be the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame voter. I sat on all these committees and voted or not voted, or Village Voice, Paz and Job, any of it. Rolling Stone, 500 Greatest Albums or whatever. These are flawed metrics, flawed rubrics. It's just what we have, though.
I mean, I think this is a great opportunity to get into, right, some of the conversation we've seen, particularly over the last week as it relates to the Grammys. Although I feel like we hear this, at least we've heard it every year for the last, since I've been covering the Grammys, in terms of, like, not only just the fans, but also, like, other people in the industry, other artists, talking about the ways in which various systems and various ways of voting and deciding, you know, who gets the nomination and who gets the vote and what committee this is and the committee do this in terms of, you know, why certain people win and certain people lose, why certain people get a nomination and why certain people don't. I wonder if are you able to speak to how that works? I know it's different per award show. Like, Billboard's is more chart oriented, I think, versus like Grammys, which has a committee or two committees or something like that that verifies nominations and stuff like that.
Everybody's is a mess.
Yeah. All right. Like, moving on.
I don't even like we could break down, like, and I'm not capable, honestly, right now of breaking down everybody's like that, but mm-hmm. I can just say of the many committees and that I've been on, the many times I've voted or been asked to vote, I've never received a ballot and said, oh my God, this is the fairest thing I've ever seen. Mm. This is, oh my God, I see all the races are being represented in such a way that is true to their actual selves and impact on culture. Oh my God, I'm so happy to vote right now because everything seems so marvelous and upfront and on point. I've never had that experience with anything that I've voted for or judged. It just doesn't exist like that. I mean, when I think about for Grammys and the committees that I've been on to help make Grammys more relevant to the Black community, to get more African Americans involved in the voting process and to be members and things like that. And there are people that have done an insane amount of work. I think particularly of Jimmy Jam, who's been involved in the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences for years and has done so much work. The same for the Songwriters Hall of Fame. He's a producer, but he's so much more. He's a good person to have on the show, honestly, because believe me, he'll tell you way better than I can. So it's not that people aren't out here doing work to make things better. It's just that certain habits are so ingrained into these systems. It's so hard to change. And in fairness, even with us, because on these committees, it's like this. So often we all go in very enthusiastic. We all go in ready to work.
Right.
I feel like 20 minutes in, 40 minutes in, it's like, this shit ain't gonna change. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna change. And you feel the mood turning, and it's unfortunate. And then you hear people talking, you know, white people talking about what could be and what couldn't be, and you're looking at them and you're like, I know, but you guys did say that 25 years ago. So, you know what I mean? It can be discouraging. Now, all that being said, talking to you guys, I'm like, we shouldn't default to that defeatist place. We should be more like a Jimmy Jam who takes on that type of work and doesn't let it get him down. And there's many people like him, but he does stand out to me.
Can we stay right there though? Because I think what you're saying is something that is really at the root of a lot of the conversations that we have about awards, is how we've been talking about this for years, right? Like, none of this is new. And we joke that white people just learned about racism last year, right? And last June. And that's frustrating. And like, oh, we need to have a conversation about diversity. Oh, we need to have more, you know, programming or music that is, you know, more equitable to different communities. Huh, where have we ever heard that? Black Lives Matter, what? Like, you know what I mean? And I would really love for you to stay with that point about whether or not you think the moment that we're in right now, that change actually is possible, or if you're not as optimistic.
The crazy thing about me is that I'm an optimistic person. Mm-hmm. I just believe that no matter what the outcome looks like or what we can imagine that outcome to be, that we have to continue to fight. Other than that, I don't know who I am as a person or who we are as a people. I feel like even if the future is shown to me and it's like racism is never going to be over, like that was just like the law that came down, just mm-hmm. isn't ever going to change. There is no way that I would not fight that. And I don't think that there's any way that we as a people would not fight that. So that is my version of optimism. It's why I still do what I do. It's why I still, after decades of being a writer and an editor, it's like I still want to talk about what Black women are doing. I want to talk about what Black people are doing. It's why I want to write a book to talk about what Black women are doing, because it just isn't fair. I do think it incrementally, yes, it does get better. And then people get scared by people, I mean white mainstream America or white Hollywood or white recording, you know, community, people get scared. And then there's a bit of a backlash. And then we kind of mm-hmm. have to start again, maybe from a little bit further than we were originally, but not where we should be. I guess that is what they call, what is it, two steps backward for every step forward, or you got to work twice as hard to get half as far. All those old sayings that we came up with. That's the unfortunate part for me, is that those things are true. And I would like to just get to a point where the steps we take are the steps we take. That's what I would like to do. That's what I would like to see.
I love that. I mean, I remember on Sunday reading, Ledisi tweeted that she won a Grammy, having been nominated, I think, like 12 times before. And she won her first one this year. And, you know, Ledisi is a talent to me. There's a mm-hmm. reason why they pull her out for all of the tributes. And reading that, I was like, that's how I knew. That's all the confirmation I needed to know that, like, the system was flawed because she is such a talent and I love so much of her music. And at the same time, I will say the first 10 minutes of the Grammys this year, I didn't know not one of them songs. Not one of them song. Not no Watermelon Sugar. Not no what's the little girl? The Billie little girl Eilish. With the green hair. What's her name?
Billie Eilish.
Oh, Billie.
Yeah, that one. Didn't know that song either. I'm a relatively.
I thought you were a big Haim fan though. I was
okay. Now I love Haim.
Okay. Oh, I'm kidding. I didn't know that you.
But I didn't know the song that they play. Listen, I think I'm still playing like circa 2009 tracks. Okay, over here. All
You're
right.
You're not that modern.
I am still playing Fantasia's debut album. Okay. Because it bumps.
Nobody talks enough about Fantasia at all.
Oh, listen, I talk enough.
To be clear, this is a Fantasia stan account. That, okay,
is this the Fantasia fan club meeting?
Listen,
is that what I joined?
Okay, baby. When I tell you, board member over here, like Travell is the Fantasia stan. Okay, but so when we think about the things that frustrate us with awards, Travell, where does that start for you?
I mean, I think for me, it's one of those things where, like, I hear people, you know, have conversations about, like, divesting from the Grammys and divesting from these award systems. And I always receive that kind of in a skeptical way because, as Danielle mentioned, the ways in which Grammy-nominated or Grammy-winning does things for people's careers. In terms of longevity, like you mentioned Michael Kilgore will forever be able to say he is a Grammy nominated artist, right? And that does things and it has material benefits for folks, right? And I know we want to, you know, build a whole new system. Or one thing that I hear a lot of people say is that, oh, you know, you need to put more energy into like the BET Awards or into, you know, the Soul Train Awards and NAACP. And I believe all that too, you know, but I also know that like, if we being real, BET Award nominated and Grammy Award nominated, it hits different, you know, career-wise for a lot of folks. And
it's that's so unfortunate. Shade. It's so right. unfortunate. It's super unfortunate. It's literally like, wildly unfortunate that that's true, but it is true.
To Danielle's earlier point, you mentioned like the charts and the awards don't always represent the impact that the thing has had on culture. And I think that's such an important point. I think about, for me, with India RE, like, India RE is one of those artists that I've always loved and, like, have gotten the chance to, like, have conversation with. And, like, I know that India, that Grammy event, and she's talked about this a lot, and I interviewed her about this, was going to the Grammys and being nominated, I think, 8 times that night and not winning a single award, how difficult that was. But, like, what that did for her as an individual, but like how it moved in culture, right? Like her music had already had an impact, but I think that really speaks to the people that are a part of the process, right? Like one of the things that she said when the Heat Rocks episode that I was on talking about her music was that like, she said that she wasn't used to people talking about her music that got her music. So oftentimes the critics were like white men who didn't understand what she was talking about. And I think that so often the awards kind of reflect that same thing. To me, Lemonade not winning that year, even like Beyonce self-titled, right? Like the way that that had an impact in culture, the way that that changed things for the ways that people did their albums and visuals and all kinds of things, it was criminal that it didn't win that year.
Mm-hmm. Can we actually, you just reminded me of one thing I'd like to bring up before we get out of here. I would love to know you all's opinions on, you know, for the last, I'd say 3 out of the last 5 years, it might be 4, you know, a white person has won a particular award and then they have used their speech to, you know, applaud the black person who they thought deserved it. And, you know, the ding-dongs on the internet feel a particular way, you know, about that. And I think I do, too.
I was going to say, the ones around here do, too. Because...
It just gives that little uncomfortable feeling in my gut when it happens. And I would love to know, you know, on the one hand, I think it's, like, great to see that camaraderie and that lifting up of folks. And then on the other hand, I'm like, okay, well, just give them the award then. You know, that's how I feel.
If you feel that way, Adele, if you feel that way, Billie Eilish.
How do you feel, Danielle?
2 ways. It's fine, and I'm already bored of it.
That part.
Like, can we not? Don't stand up on the stage and fake give me an award. Give me the award. And I don't mean the person. I mean the organization.
Right.
That's like, I don't want your half award. I don't want your 25-cent award. I want the award. And to see, if I have to see another black woman in front row with the Grammys trying not to cry, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'm not talking about the last 2 years. I'm talking about the last 40 years.
Right.
And it's, and let me get off of my complete black girl songbook, Shine Bright soapbox and say, and the same for black men, male artists. It's like so much research I've done recently for both of these platforms that I have. And one of them is me taking a real look. Cause I do find fascinating the minutia around awards and particularly the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because that's the ultimate space. It's the ultimate space. Mm-hmm. If you're a musician, a musical artist. And I saw the OJs being inducted. And you know Eddie LaVert is a good spirit. Gerald LaVert's daddy. Mm-hmm. He's roly-poly. He's a baritone. He got a lot of jokes and kind of sexy. But you know, that's just me. You could tell my type from a mile away. But the other lead singer, his name is escaping me right now, with the earring, Walter Lee Williams. He got up there, and he's the real leader of the group, and he said to the effect of, It's about goddamn time. Mm. He said to the effect of, this is a very mean business because it took so long for the OJs. And I know for some, that's an old school group that maybe you don't know about their hits, but they should have been in the Rock Hall by the time they got into the Rock Hall. And the way he said it was a mean business, it stays with me. And then another example to me is, this goes back to the Grammys, is when Jody Watley won Best New Artist.
And the Best New Artist is?
The person that presented the award was Little Richard.
Me. I have never received nothing. You ain't never gave me no Grammy. And I've been singing for years. I am the architect of rock and roll. You ain't never gave me nothing.
And you know how these moments are so fraught, I think, for Black artists.
And I am the originator. And I still say, woo!
The eggshells are all over the floor.
And the winner is still me.
Because you're trying to be happy in your good clothes, but in many ways you're mad. And you're not anticipating the best outcome. And Lil Richard got up there and basically said, before I get on to announcing the nominees for Best New Artist, I just want to remind you all that I invented rock and roll. And he was so mad. He didn't look like any type of happy Lil Richard that we normally see standing up on his piano bench and banging on them keys. No, he looked like he was ready to take off all wigs and all clothes and fight. Okay, so, and then he, it's very clear, he remembers himself. He remembers that he's in front of everybody and it's Grammys. And I think maybe at that point, he may not had ever received a Grammy himself. When they said that it was Jody Watley that won, the joy that you could see his whole face, I mean to tell you, it's like these award shows are fraught. When I see Janae Aiko, when I see Beyonce, when I see any of these people sitting up there in their good clothes, knowing that their work is better than the work that's being awarded, more pertinent, more relevant, more impact on culture, a lot of times more sales, with everything that works against them at radio, at retail, at streaming, at everything. And then they got to have somebody say, oh, no, but it really does kind of belong to you, though. Miss me with it.
Period. Yeah. Before we get out of here, I want to ask you directly about the podcast, Black Girl Songbook. For folks who have ignored my directives on this podcast before and haven't yet checked it out, give us a little sampling of what they can expect.
I mean, honestly, I do appreciate, and I appreciate the support so much that you all have given Black Girl Song, but you guys have a very popular podcast, one that's been going on for a while, and guys have mad fans and things like that. So I really do appreciate you guys mentioning it and talking about it. Travell and I go back. Travell's seen me. We go back. We were at Stanford together doing our work there, and Travell's always been a huge supporter of things, and I try to do the same back, but it's just such a good relationship, and I really do appreciate it. You would hear more of me talking the type of mess that I'm talking here on Fanta, but more very specifically doing storytelling about Black women in music, Black women in popular music. It's a place, as I say over and over again, it's a place where Black women get the credit that they are due, and I include myself in that. I include all Black women in music in that. And I do have guests, but a lot of times I am actually doing a more narrative style of podcasting. It's that type of show where I interview people, but I also do reporting. I back up my thoughts with facts and my own personal stories about doing things like going to the Grammys or MTV Music Video Awards. On the last episode, I was talking about Lauren, Lauren's Lost Ones being the best disc record of all time, which I stand by, and I wish somebody would argue with me because I will go with you all the way down that street. But it also began, you know, it made me think about Hit 'Em Up from Tupac, So I talked about that because something that I haven't talked about a lot in my life is the relationship that I had with Tupac Shakur before he became Tupac, the recording artist. And so these are the kind of stories that I have, honestly, 8 billion of, just from being editor-in-chief of Vibe twice, being music editor at Vibe, being R&B editor at Billboard, working at ESPN as culture editor, all, and also just probably having gone to over 2,000, I think I'm counting now, shows in my life, whether they were award shows or concerts or anything like that. And it's time for me to tell my story, my stories, honestly, and the stories of Black women. Every time I interview somebody, I'll just put it out there, I interviewed Anita Pointer today for something. Anita Pointer of the Pointer Sisters. Anita Pointer of Yes We Can. All those great big pop records too from the Pointer Sisters. They're from Oakland, California. I'm from Oakland, California. We had a lot to talk about. You heard. And I don't even really all the time claim the larger. I just claim East Oakland. So
I was born at Kaiser in Oakland. So shout out to Kaiser Oakland.
All right. Did you say Kaiser Oakland? You really are.
Me and Kamala Harris, Kaiser and Oakland, yeah.
My mama used to work at Highland. That's how serious I am.
Okay.
You're not from Oakland.
I was born in Oakland. I'm from the Bay Area, yeah. Oh, you think I just threw out a yay area like that? But I'm from Milwaukee? Like,
are you saying that I have to put some respect back upon your name?
Yes, I am. Damn it.
All yes. I'm saying is this. I'm talking to Anita Pointer today, and the thing that I took away from the conversation, as I take away from so many conversations that I've had over my entire career, and specifically for Black Girl Songbook, is that nobody asks Black women any goddamn thing. Mm-hmm. And it's rude, and I'm tired of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be all, like, preachy about it, but it's true. It's like, I had Angela Yee on to talk about Lauren, and it's like everybody's surprised that Angela Yee from The Breakfast Club, which is 5 million strong at this point, every morning, every weekday morning, iHeartRadio. Angela Yee went to high school with Lauryn Hill. Lauryn Hill did Angela Yee's makeup on prom night. Now, these are the kind of things that, why don't we all know that already? Angela Yee is on the radio every day. No one asks Black women anything. No one asks the Pointer Sisters about why they dressed the way they did, how they were able to get out of that whole way of, like, everybody matching, like in the Supremes and all those things, and take the 70s by storm with their style and their post-gospel stomping and become really the third best-selling girl group of all time behind the Supremes and TLC. But yet, does anybody talk about the Pointer Sisters? So that's why we have a Black Girl Songbook. That's why I saw a need for it. You see that I'm passionate about it. And I just really wish I could spend every moment making stuff for it. I'm trying to organize my life in that way.
I love that. We want to let you all know that Danielle's new show is called Black Girl Songbook. Is it 6 episodes in now into the show?
I am 6 episodes in. Shout out to Spotify and The Ringer. 6 yeah. episodes in.
It comes out on the same day as our show on Thursdays. So the new episode is out right now. Go check out Black Girl Songbook over on Spotify. Dude, can you tell us what the new episode is about?
Oh, well, the most recent episode is the Lauryn Hill episode. And it's popping. And we're on a little, a mid-season 1 week vacay. And we'll be back next week. And no, I can't even tell you because we're trying to decide what the next one is, but it's going to be big. It's going to be amazing.
Okay.
But not as amazing as Fanti. It could never be that.
Now you're lying to people, so it's fine. It's whatever. Our thanks to Danielle Smith for being a part of our conversation today. I'm just so grateful that you were able to be a part of this conversation. Thank you.
You guys, I'm grateful that you had me. Thank you. And please have me back again.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Want to ask the question of the week. What's your favorite music award show moment? Tweet or post using the hashtag FantiFam. We'll be jumping in, responding from our accounts on Twitter and Instagram at FantiPodcast. Curious about what we miss on our list? Make sure to use the hashtag FantiFam. Coming up, dishonorable mentions, our Black History moment, and why y'all love us so much. We love y'all right back. Fanti's coming right back.
Omelette du fromage.
if you are listening to us try to speak another language, you probably have understood that we need something to help us learn another language. And maybe Babbel would be the perfect thing. The number one selling language learning app, Babbel is dedicated to making learning a new language fun and easy within 15 minutes. Bite-sized lessons that you'll easily use in the real world. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel, their lessons are created by over 100 language experts. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent.
Yo soy Travel Anderson.
Oh, Jesus.
Right now, when you purchase... With your purchase of a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months total for the price of 3. Just go to Babbel.com and use promo code FANTI. That's Babbel.com, code FANTI, for an extra 3 months free. Babbel, language for life.
Also, thank you, Babbel, for supporting the show for so long. All right, welcome back to Fanti. It is now time for us to get into our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or for their stupid. Travel, I love the moment that you have, so I'm going to let you go first.
Sure. So I only have, I guess, two that are all that are both related to the that little award show that happened on Sunday. And so first I wanted to shout out Megan Thee Stallion because you deserve, sis. We see you and we see your knees. Amen. Amen. And then I wanted to give an honorable mention to somebody who we've mentioned on this podcast in various forms thus far. Someone, and that is Tiffany Haddish.
Probably has a whole episode about her at some point.
Likely has a whole episode on her own. But she was working. She's the new host for Kids Say the Darndest Things. And so apparently she was working during the Grammys. And she won the Grammy for Best Comedy Album. And so there's a clip that we're going to play. Basically, you're going to hear her talking. And then you're going to hear a producer who's in her ear feeding her things that she would typically say to the kids. And take a listen.
A couple of times for some things.
But I just won a Grammy.
And I love, I just what?
You just won a Grammy.
I just love being nominated.
I just won a Grammy?
No.
Are you serious?
I'm not lying. I'm telling you the truth.
Wait. Y'all see this thing in my ear? Y'all see this in my ear?
Tell them all you just won a Grammy. Congratulations. You just won the Best Comedy Album.
Y'all serious?
I'm serious. This is no lie. This is for real.
I really won?
Whoa.
You know, a black woman hasn't won in that category since 1986?
Yes, I learned that from Black History.
Yeah, a black woman hasn't won for Best Comedy Album since Whoopi Goldberg. Can I tell you why I'm crying?
Why?
It's a lot of bumpy roads that you cross, right? And it's a lot of times you feel like, well, am I doing the right thing? Is this good enough? Am I good enough? Am I strong enough to do this job? And then you just have to believe in yourself as much as you can. And against all odds, you just say, you know what? I'm going to just put my best foot forward, and I'm going to give the world the best that I got, right? Mm-hmm. Anything is possible.
I love that.
It's just so cute, and she starts to tear up, and, you know, it reminds me of a little bit of what we were talking about before in terms of, like, yeah, the Grammys may be shit, but, like, they mean stuff to a lot of people, both kind of internally and individually, as well as, like, career-wise. So those are my honorable mentions.
All of mine are Grammy-related as well. First, Lil Baby's Grammy performance, where they simulate a police killing of a black man. Mm-hmm. I was really, really frustrated about that. I love Kendrick and Kendrick Sampson, who was the actor in that scene. And I think Kendrick does a lot of really great work. But I felt like it was such a bad choice. I'm a person, and I think I've talked about this on the show, but like, I'm a person who does not watch the videos of police killings anymore, unless like I absolutely have to because I have to go cover it or something. And even then, I watch it very cautiously. I've never seen the full video of George Floyd's killing. The last time I watched a full video was Philando Castile, and like I was devastated by that. And watching his daughter like console her mom, and so like to see that on the Grammys with no warning, no understanding of what was about to happen. And, like, I mean, you don't see him the way that they did it. I just really didn't like it. So that's a dishonorable mention. And
I just can I just do a little sub mention? Samaria White, Rice, excuse me, is I believe how you say her name. Tamia Rice's mother is going in.
She was not pleased.
She was not pleased at all. Which, side note, that's probably also another episode just about, you know, she called them the Black Lives Matter celebrities. But, okay, keep going.
No, I mean, there's probably an episode there, too. I want to give an honorable mention to two women. Trevor, I don't know if you actually know these women. The first woman is a 9-year-old named Blue Ivy Carter.
I know the icon.
Oh, you've heard of her. Okay.
Yes.
And also her mom's name, I'm trying to read it here in the script. Her name is Beyonce. Beyonce slaying all the records. People have been talking about it all week. I don't have to get into that anymore at length. Finally, I want to give a shout out to Cardi B, who obviously they had the performance of WAP that everyone loved. I loved the short pinkish blondish hair. I loved that look.
That was a good wig. Loved that look.
But what I really want to shout Cardi out for is before the Grammys, she did this long iOS press release, as we now call them, where she was giving a shout out to all of the lesser known artists who were nominated but don't always get the shine. And she named them in her long statement. And I just thought it was such a great thing for her, someone at her level, to acknowledge all of those folks who, you know, don't always get all the shine, and they won't be on the national telecast, and they may not win. But I just thought it was a really, really great way for her to acknowledge those folks. Now, as we move into Black History is Happening Every Day.
Black History is Happening Every Day.
Travell, I think we should talk about something that happened at another music award show that, you know, I mean, it's Black History.
So, yes, it is. Sorry, okay. So the moment is Kanye interrupting Taylor Swift at the VMAs.
Why did that just break you up right now?
Because we all feel a way about Kanye today. We did a whole episode on Kanye, didn't we?
We did.
And so, like, it just feels interesting to honor him, or at least honor the moment, in this particular way when we all still side-eyeing him right now. But this, honey, was a moment.
But it was a moment honoring Beyonce, to be clear.
Period.
Like to maybe win one of these someday, but I never actually thought that would happen. I sing country music, so thank you so much for giving me a chance to win a VMA award.
Yo, Taylor, I'm really happy for you. I'll let you finish, but Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time. One of the best videos of all time.
Yikes. I mean, like, listen, all moments in Black history aren't amazing moments. Some of them are shit. Mind you, entertaining as fuck. And if you're at home watching this happen, I was gagged.
Listen, gooped, honey.
Listen.
All right, before we go, if this conversation piqued your interest and you want more of this.
Good.
You said that reluctantly. Check out
another episode. I didn't realize what was happening until we were already there, and I was like, God damn it.
We want to encourage you to check out one of our previous episodes, episode 31, White Singers, Black Voices, featuring the one and only Garrick Kennedy. Alrighty, people.
That's right. It's really good conversation with another fantastic music journalist about music. So we thank you all so much for listening. We thank you all for really showing up really well for the merch and the ways that we've could not have expected. So we're really, really grateful for all of you showing up and buying masks and hoodies and t-shirts and all that stuff is going to be going out soon.
And if you missed out on it, you just missed out on it.
Listen, so you gotta wait till the next. And right. So Drip 2, right? I mean, listen, we've got some really cool things lined up for Drip 2. I don't know what they are.
Took us a year and a half just to get Drip 1. So imagine how long it might take to get Drip 2.
No, don't say that. Don't say that. We thank you so much for listening. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating and a review because it really, really helps people find the show and decide to listen to it. If you have a comment or a suggestion about this week's episode, you can tweet at us or hit us up on Instagram, both at Fanti Podcast using the hashtag FantiFam. Again, that's at Fanti Podcast. If you want to be a part of our Maximum Fun Fam of the Fanti Fam,
yes, you could go over to MaximumFun.org/join and do that. And as always, you can shoot us an email at Fanti@MaximumFun.org if you've got some feedback or some episode suggestions. We will listen to it all, or at least most of it.
Our music is produced by Corice. You can find him wherever you get your Slayworthy audio. That is Core.ece. Our graphics and photos are designed by Ashley Nguyen and Moonhouse Creative. Our producer this week is Jordan Cowan and Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
All my favorite colors. Yay! Let's do a clap sync for the top. What was that?
I was just trying to follow your lead, sir, for the first time in my life.
Okay.